Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. Sorry that I might sound a bit weird right now. It's just that after I finally finished all the script, got a nosebleed. Pretty horrible, so one of my nostrils is just piled up. But that's I hope that's going to be okay. Secondly, I wanted to say thank you to everyone who's been sending me emails lately. I've had a lot of those coming up here, and if I hadn't responded to you, I'm sorry about that. I have read all of them. It's just that I'm really busy with doing this, and also marriage is coming closer, you know. And I also have to send the maps to the people who order them. You can find out about the maps either by mailing me or going to our Discord server. It's a whole different story here. But yeah, basically busy doing stuff, and apparently nosebleeds. Can't get rid of those. But yeah, the most important part is the fact that once again, to no surprise of everyone, on March 18th, Russia's Central Election Commission announced that Vladimir Putin would remain in power once again for his fifth term in office. Following this win, so-called, in these things called what he would like to call elections, but that's like Putin, to no surprise of anyone who's been following and watching, you know, the whole thing about what he was supposed to receive in these elections, got 87.28% of the vote, with a voter turnout of 77.44%, which is just beyond realistic to every possible degree. Surprisingly, the Central Election Commission continues to post data about individual polling stations, and then you can like piece it together how the authorities manufactured these results, and it's totally stupid. I mean, here in this case, previously, see, if in previous elections, like in 2018 and all these other cases, before the results even, you know, we had videos about fraudulent stuff, but you had to look at the statistics to understand how everything had been stolen. Not this year. Because you see, in previous elections, Putin had trusted his political agitators, his political wing of the whole Kremlin government to run these things. And they knew that, you know, you had to have at least some resemblance to legitimacy here. I think here this is being run by the State Council of Security. I don't really think anyone else could have made it so blatant. Because, yeah, if previously you had to look at statistics, right now it's just that they just drew whatever numbers they wanted. And the weirdest part is they actually managed to get even there. They had to, it went to the point where they had to even increase the voting results, not only for Putin, but also for like the communist candidate or for the LDPR candidate. LDPR being the good old Zhirinovsky's party, which makes you feel weird when you understand that, yeah, I'm kind of even sad about Zhirinovsky at this point, which makes it extremely sad and just stupid, but still. This was just weird because, you know, if you know anything about bell curves and how normal distribution works, and if you look at how voters turn out, basically the bigger the turnout, the more people vote for Putin percentage wise. So it's obviously fraudulent. It's insane. And I think what's going to hit people the most is the fact that this year, you know, he just really stopped caring. I think this is going to be the last election one way or another because with these results, he just utterly stopped caring about anything. The weirdest part is that apparently he had added some 20%, like, to his vote. So there are a lot of people who voted for him, obviously. And a lot of Russian oppositionaries who wanted to vote for, like, Maxim Kotsdam or all these people. Yeah, they really thought they would have changed something with this, but nope, nothing really happened. Now, we have people around here from Medusa who managed to speak with sources close to Putin's administration and some other people. And there are some comments about this whole situation. The Putin's administration political bloc actually exceeded the targets set for this vote. Kremlin officials tasked Russia's regional governments with securing 70% voter turnout and 80% support for Putin. According to one election strategy document, obtained by my fellow journalists, the leadership of one Russian region set themselves this exact target and planned to achieve it primarily through mobilizing public sector employees and the employees of companies close to the state. But in the weeks before the vote, the Putin administration began to express a desire, quote-unquote, for the incumbent to win upwards of 80%. Two regional officials have shared this information with people who interviewed them. I couldn't do that. It was people from Medusa this time. It's just that, well, obviously I'm bad in Russia. As a result, 80% support was perceived as an absolute minimum, and many regions decided to aim for 85%. As a source close to the administration put it, the head of the Kremlin's political bloc, Sergei Kiryenko, really, quote, wanted to show the president very high numbers. And that's what he did. At the same time, a political strategist working with the Putin administration in one Russian region highlighted another contributing factor in the sky-high results for Putin. Russia's far eastern regions, quote, set the bar too low. As they had set the bar too low, well, they at the end they kind of noticed this whole situation, managed to fix it, overdid it, and then everyone else had to overdo it as well. So the Far East tallies the results earlier than the other regions want to show better numbers, you know. They underdid, then they overdid, and everyone else had to, you know, overdo it as well. So yeah, most of the regions of the Russian Far East Federal District reported eventually, like, because the official numbers, of course, are total mismatch with the numbers that were later registered, reported that Putin had won more than 85% of the vote. The Khabarovsky Krai, which Kremlin officials consider a protest region, was the exception, reporting only 80% support for Putin. Regional officials also have told opposition journalists that Putin's envoy to the Far Eastern Federal District steered local administrations towards the target of 85%. The presidential envoy, Deputy Prime Minister Yuri Turtiev, wanted to demonstrate that the Far East is the president's base and not an opposition territory, the official stated. Kremlin officials don't see a problem with Putin achieving such high numbers, by the way. Two sources close to the Putin administration told my colleagues at Medusa that, quote, Kiryenko is pleased with the election results and doesn't concern them overkill or falsified bullshit, end quote. According to a source close to United Russia's leadership, Kiryenko has already made personal phone calls to most of Russia's governors to thank them for their help in the elections. Another one of these sources close to the Kremlin stated, quote, no matter what anyone says about regional officials overdoing it or going overboard, they won't be punished for a victory. The supreme leader likes it. He perceives this as real support. Kiryenko knows how to present it to him and sell it. That's the main thing. Another source close to the Putin administration drew special attention to the results reported in Moscow. According to election officials, Putin won more than 85% of the vote in the capital, a number just below the national average. Before there was a gap, it was more than 5% in the last campaign. Now Moscow is an exemplarily loyal region. One of the sources stated that Sergei Sobyanin can sell this to the president as his personal achievement, that he had pacified the capital, which is just beyond idiotic. The runner-up, the official one of the election, the Communist Party candidate Nikolai Kharitonov, got a 4.3.1% of the vote. New People Party candidate Vladislav Davankov and LDPR leader Leonid Slutsky scraped up about, you know, 3.85% and 3.2% respectively. This means that all three of Putin's challengers supported the required threshold for their parties to receive around 500 million rubles or $5.4 million in federal funding. Because, you see, if your party manages to get 3% of the votes in the presidential election, you're bound to, you know, get some extra funding from the government because, you know, that's how the law works, and this is why they agree to this whole farce. But besides the utter idiocy of this so-called election thing, I have to give you some interesting news, my dear listeners, especially those of you who are from the United States. But, you know, everyone who, especially those who were with me in the live stream when we watched this, oh boy, this is part of our Meanwhile in Russia segment. Russian schools hold a extracurricular lesson and a quiz game based on Tucker Carlson's Putin interview. Yeah, I'm not, this is serious. This is just, besides everything. See, on March 11th, schools and colleges throughout Russia began piloting an extracurricular program called From Rus to Russia, in which students are shown Vladimir Putin's interview with American, I would like to call him political commentator, but the precise term, as some people say, is paid shell, or person who is just so out of his depth that no one knows what he's even doing here. Well, you know, the Tucker Carlson guy. I'm not an expert here. You call him what you want, but I definitely refuse to call him a journalist, because one thing out of everything is that's what he's not. Anyway, the initiative about these schools was first reported in the media by, quote, Not the Norm, a Telegram channel dedicated to gathering information about the Russian government's pro-war propaganda in schools. According to this channel, after watching part of the Putin-Carlson interview, students take part in the competition that consists of answering questions about the reasons for Russia's invasion of Ukraine, the Minsk agreements, United States sanctions, and related topics. And there are reports, many reports, about these new lessons on school websites, like lessons called everywhere. Chuvash Republic, Bashkortostan, all over the place. Moscow, Rostov, Novosibirsk, all the regions. They're everywhere. In some parts of Russia, the program was only offered to high school students. In other, it was shown to students of all ages, from the first grade to 11th. 11th being the maximum in Russia, where they only study 11 years. Yeah, weird as it is. Two, the questions included in the quiz portion of the program include, quote, What is reunification? What unites the Russian and Ukrainian people? Which answer option could not be applied to the word Ukrainian in the 13th century? The answer choices listed for the last question are border guard, person living at the edge, resident of the borderland, and resident of the country of Ukraine. Yeah, it's just bizarre. Students are also told to choose countries that have had so-called color revolutions from a list that includes Uzbekistan, Ukraine, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Latvia, and Kyrgyzstan, which is Russia's colonial and Soviet name for what is the now country of Kyrgyzstan. Which, what makes me really sad is, why is Latvia chosen as an example? We hadn't had any of these color revolutions. We managed to get rid of Soviets, and then we're here, but I'm getting more and more concerned by Latvia just being mentioned all over the place. Makes me feel really worried, to be honest. Most schools' online posts about the lessons end with the same phrase, quote, This was an interesting and informative activity. The students also held an enthusiastic discussion about what questions they would ask the president of our country, Mr. Vladimir Putin. The school in the Saratov region said it's quiz lasted for 11 rounds and included questions about various historical events, figures and cultural phenomena connected to the formation of the state of Russia. It continued, students could immediately determine whether their answers were correct using the video from the interview with the president and the American journalist. And I just keep feeling amazing. There is nothing wrong about this. Everything is fine. Everything is glorious. And we're just keeping up all this weird nonsense. Why? Because, well, obviously, nothing weird about this situation. I mean, Tucker Carlson gets taught in Russian schools at this point. You can tell this to your friends and family, I suppose, as well. Meanwhile, on other news, which will surprise you a bit less, is the fact that Apparently, a former Wagner Group fighter in Moscow. This is the criminal news, which I like. I pick the most shocking thing and then I just tell you about it. Former Wagner Group fighter who was recruited by the mercenary outfit from prison shot his business associate at point blank range at the St. Petersburg restaurant on Monday, and then he continued to eat his meal. Murder was captured by security cameras in the establishment, and footage published by the news outlet Bumaga, or paper, shows a man pulling out a gun and shooting the man sitting across from him. The victim jumps up before falling to the floor. The shooter then walks over and shoots the man several more times before returning to the table and finishing eating his meal. The news site Fontanka reported that the man is Alexei Isakov, a 40-year-old former Wagner Group member who was in prison for theft before going to Ukraine. According to the outlet, he claimed that the man whom he shot owed him 7 million rubles, or $76,000. Isakov was reportedly arrested shortly after the incident, but, you know, at this point, it's all, you know, just a turning back. And now the weird part. Weird part is that, the Belgorod incident, the guys who are just fighting there, Russians and stuff, they're being bombed by Russians. We have videos where this is continuing. Out of all the things, there's, as far as I know, the Russian battle plans at this point were to push on their success in Avdiivka and push in the reserves and try to cut off the Donbass region, right? But they can't do it because this whole assault inside of Russian territory in Belgorod, yeah, that's going on in strength. It's still going on. There are battles and like reserves have been put on there. And Belgorod is now being sort of evacuated. They're just bombing their own buildings there, indiscriminately bombing, and there are tanks happening there. I still cannot really honestly inform you about the casualties and what's going on in all those places, right? But, it's going on, and this place has gathered not only these so-called Russian Liberation Legion agents, but there's also people who fight for independent Chechnya, the Ingushetia Legion, all these people, you know. Everyone who has Russian ties or connections in every Russian separatist group ever is now, apparently, I can't really guarantee it for sure, because the reports from them also coming out from these fighters of the Ukrainian side is just nonsense, like utter nonsense number just being spouted here. Like, they claim they've destroyed so many BRTs and everything. I need some video files. But all in all, it's still 8 days... nine days of constant fighting, and something's happening in Belgorod. And the weirdest part is, like, after the election, they're just now starting to talk about all the situation. But yeah, you know, one thing though is that I've also seen before, you know, as I finish this, because I'm gonna dig in this Belgorod stuff. That's what I live through with, because I want something verifiable, and I just get stuff that's just nonsense. But I'm trying to figure all this stuff out. But yeah, you know, Russia is not using nukes, even tactical nukes, even when their own territory, old territories they like to claim, is being assaulted. So, you know, now they won't use them. I just want to calm everyone down, because I've seen more and more of these, again, rumors about how Russia is going to nuke everyone, still flopping around everywhere. But yeah, Belgorod is heated up. There's the most active combat is happening there. Everywhere else is just a massive stalemate. Nothing much is happening. And as soon as I get some information about Belgorod region that is believable and that I can actually verify, I'll let you know. At any rate, thank you for listening. And if you don't support our show, but you would like to, patreon.com/EasternBorder, please go and support the show there. Or just go to the easternborder.lv and click the donate button there, or just write us an email and we'll always talk to you about, you know, whatever you do like, as soon as I get the time to answer all your emails. I'm really, really sorry. I had some ideas about collaboration there being sent to me, really interesting mails. I just really hadn't gotten the time to respond to them just yet, but I will definitely do so. You know whom I'm talking to, all you people who really want to do that. But yeah, до свидания, товарищи. Thank you for listening. As always, remember, happiness is mandatory. And that ultra depressive episode, that's still coming. working on it.